How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, Happy Friday! Then you check your phone quickly and discover today is actually Friday. So yes, Happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.
15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
Is that Shakespeare?
Nope, it's Geico.
Yeah, that's Shakespeare from one of his unpublished works. Oh, it be not for awakening. Nay, giveth thou the berries. For 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
Nope, it's from Geico, because they help save people money.
Well, I hate to break it to you, but Geico got it from Shakespeare.
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
We're always driving to dance lessons. So we signed up for Know Your Drive. We save money and get closer to her dancing dreams.
The daring young man on the flying trapeze.
Or maybe her singing dreams. Sign up for Know Your Drive and save up to 20%. American Family Insurance. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly.
Products not available in every state. Discount terms apply. Visit amfam.com/knowyourdrive for details. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
Welcome to Crimatorium. I'm your host, Madeline. The case I'm about to present to you is not just a case. This is the tale of two promising young people that were savagely tortured and their lives unjustly taken. I first learned of this crime several years ago, and I've wanted to present it in a podcast, but have hesitated to release it due to the current climate that we find ourselves in. This crime was not considered a hate crime by law enforcement, nor was it tried as such. I believe it was a crime of opportunity, and that's how I will be presenting it. I hope that the way I do present this case comes across with respect, sensitivity, and reverence for Shannon and Chris, as well as their family and friends. This crime is especially brutal. It contains graphic details of a sexual and violent nature. Listener discretion is advised. Knoxville is the third largest city in Tennessee, with a population of 188,000. It is divided into four sections: North, South, East, and West Knoxville. The arts and music culture is strong in the area, with bluegrass music being a favorite at the many festivals held there each year. The University of Tennessee is located in Knoxville and was ranked the best southeastern college by the Princeton Review in 2019 and is considered one of the more selective colleges in terms of admissions. It was in Knoxville that Shannon Christian Christopher Newsom met through mutual friends and began dating each other in November of 2006. Shannon was 21 and a senior at the University of Tennessee, majoring in sociology. She had less than a year to go before graduating. She was born in Nacogdoches, Texas on April 29, 1985, to parents Gary and Dina Christian. The family lived in Texas along with Shannon's older brother, Chase, until relocating to Knoxville in 1997. Dina, Shannon's mom, was told she would never have children, and so she felt blessed to have two. She said of Shannon, quote, "Shannon Christian lit up rooms with her toothy smile, fun-loving spirit, and gentle heart. She just loved life. Her friends would always call her with boyfriend issues. She loved children," unquote. Shannon wanted to get married someday and have four kids, the oldest being a boy just like her big brother, Chase. Christopher Newsom was born on September 21, 1983, in Knoxville, Tennessee, to parents Hugh and Mary Newsom. Most of Hugh and Mary's children were grown, with the youngest being 13 when Chris was born. The family happily welcomed their energetic baby boy into the family. Chris graduated from Halls High School in 2002, where he excelled at all sports, especially baseball. He started playing when he was very young and continued until he received an injury and had to quit. Chris was also artistic. He enjoyed creating beautiful craft artwork and artistic wood creations. He once thought of becoming a mechanic, but his talent at woodworking guided him into becoming a carpenter. Chris had already brought Shannon to meet his parents and confided to his mom that he loved her. On the night of January 6, 2007, Shannon and Chris met up at the Washington Ridge apartment complex in Knoxville, where Shannon's friend Kara Soward lived. The plan was for them to go to dinner and then to a friend's party. Chris was late to arrive, and Shannon was sitting in the driver's seat of her white Toyota 4Runner, waiting for him. Chris stood at the open door of the vehicle, and the two were exchanging kisses with one another. There's no doubt that Chris was trying to smooth things over with Shannon about being late. These blissful, priceless moments were about to be interrupted without warning, and what would follow? There's only one word, unimaginable. Lamarcus Davidson was born on June 23, 1981, to a sex worker and crack-addicted mother and an absentee alcoholic father. He was the second to the oldest child of six kids. His mother gave birth to the oldest child when she was 15 and Lamarcus when she was 16. The next sibling, Latalvis, was born when his mother was 17. It is said that it was a chaotic household, with claims of sexual abuse and severe beatings. The mother eventually left the home, and when Lamarcus was a teen, he was taken into a foster home. From all accounts, he did well in that home, and was provided with all of his basic needs and then some. His foster parents have remained loving and supportive of him to this day. Lamarcus was down and out in January of 2007 and in need of some money. His girlfriend, Daphne Sutton, had just left him. He had no car, which made it difficult for him to earn money in the way he chose, which was selling dope. He had just gotten out of prison in August of the previous year for carjacking and aggravated robbery, and was out on parole after serving 5 years. Carjacking and committing robberies was his normal modus operandi. Earlier in the month of January, Lamarcus Davidson's half-brother, Latalvis Cobbins, came from Kentucky to Knoxville to stay with Lamarcus. The two hadn't seen each other since before Davidson went to prison. Latalvis brought with him his girlfriend Vanessa Coleman and a friend George Thomas, and George's girlfriend. She ended up going back to Kentucky right away, however. Lamarcus was getting increasingly agitated by the fact that nobody that was staying at the house had any money or a car. Falling back on what he knew how to do best, Lamarcus announced to Latalvis that they and a friend, Eric Boyd, would be carjacking someone during their stay in Knoxville. Latalvis claims that he was opposed to this idea. On the night of January 6, Eric Boyd arrived in a white Pontiac Sunbird vehicle that he had borrowed from his cousin, Adrienne Mathis. Lamarcus summoned Latalvis into the kitchen and told him he wanted to introduce him to a girl. One big tragedy among many in this is that the place that this girl supposedly lived was located at the Washington Ridge apartment complex, the exact place where Shannon and Chris were at the time. The three men got into the Sunbird with Eric in the driver's seat, Lamarcus in the passenger seat, and Latavis in the back. The apartment complex was not too far from the house on Chipman Street. As they pulled into the parking lot trying to find the apartment this girl lived in, LaMarcus and Eric spotted Shannon's white Toyota 4Runner and subsequently saw Chris and Shannon. Shannon and Chris's fate were sealed at this point. LaMarcus and Eric got out of the car and held a gun to Chris's head. They told him to get into Shannon's SUV. They then tied Shannon's hands together and put her in the back seat. They also tied Chris's hands together. Latavis stayed in the Sunbird and followed LaMarcus and Eric as they drove off in Shannon's SUV. Davidson and Boyd arrived at the house on Chipman Street, as well as Latavis, where he entered the home first. LaMarcus and Eric walked both Shannon and Chris through the front door. Shannon's hands were still tied, as was Chris's, and both had a bandana over their eyes and hoodies over their heads. Davidson claims that Shannon grabbed his arm and said, quote, "I don't want to die," unquote. Davidson also told authorities that he promised Shannon on the life of his daughter that he would get her out of this. The terror Shannon and Chris must have felt would have been indescribable. Latavis claims on the witness stand that he didn't want anything to do with whatever it was his brother was doing. When he and the others tried to leave, LaMarcus pulled out a gun, and even though he didn't point it at anyone, it caused them all to feel threatened. Shannon was led into Davidson's bedroom and placed on his air mattress. Chris remained in the living room area with Latavis, Vanessa, and Eric. George and LaMarcus took Shannon's credit card and left in her SUV. At some point, while they had Shannon's vehicle, they robbed a Pizza Hut. This account is what Latavis testified to on the stand, so the truthfulness of it all is in question, but it's the only account of the events that are available. Latavis states that he went and looked in on Shannon, and he said that her hands were still tied together above her head and secured to a duffel bag full of weights. Her feet were also tied together and secured the same way her hands were. The bandana was not covering her mouth. She asked Latavis for some water. He retrieved the water and untied her hands where they were attached to the duffel bag so she could sit up and drink the water. She asked Latavis where her boyfriend Chris was and to please see if he could convince Davidson to let her go. She said she was willing to do anything. Latavis claims that she offered him oral sex. He then stated, quote, "I had her give me oral sex," unquote. He hung his head as he recounted the last part, as if he was ashamed of what had transpired. It comes across as disingenuous, as does his whole recounting of the events. He ejaculated, and it got on Shannon's shirt and her pants due to her spitting it out. There is some information in some of the documentation that he hurt her lip during this assault. He heard a sound and got nervous, so he fixed his clothes and secured Shannon's hands back to the duffel bag. You will hear his testimony on the stand later in the episode. LaMarcus and George returned to Chipman Street from robbing the Pizza Hut in Shannon's SUV. Latavis and George claimed to authorities that Eric Boyd walked out of the house with Chris at gunpoint on the night of January 7th, and when he came back in, Chris wasn't with him. They also stated that they noticed dark stains on his shirt. They also implicated Eric in the raping of Shannon as well. These claims will be a topic for a major dispute later on in the case. That was the end of Saturday night. On Sunday, January 7th, Shannon was repeatedly subjected to torture, rape in various ways, and severe beatings. It is believed that a broken chair leg was used in these assaults against Shannon. Later on in the night, LaMarcus led Shannon out of the bedroom and brought her into the kitchen. She was naked from the waist down, no pants, shoes, or socks. Latavis, in an unconvincing show of emotion, stated that LaMarcus put his arm around Shannon's neck and tried to choke her. Shannon fell to the floor, and it was thought that she was dead. As it turns out, she wasn't. Along with Latavis, Vanessa Coleman was also in the kitchen and witnessed this attempted murder of Shannon by strangulation. She was even asked by Davidson to check Shannon's pulse. Noting that the strangulation didn't work, LaMarcus took a hold of Shannon and hogtied her in a fetal position, wrapped a white grocery bag around her head, placed her in 5 trash bags, and put her in a garbage can. She was tied so tightly that her knees were touching her cheeks. The following testimony is Dr. Paul Chan, who was the medical examiner that performed Shannon's autopsy.
After an afternoon recess, Prosecutor Takesha Fitzgerald started her direct examination of Knox County Medical Examiner Dr. Jerinka Malusnik-Polchan on the manner and cause of Shannon Christian's death. And what we saw there was, of course, evidence of a very prolonged attack. Chris would have been dead within a couple of hours. Shannon's injuries, according to the doctor, occurred with a good measure of time between them. She indicated that Shannon had suffered blows to the head at some point. She had been grabbed. Her arms had been grabbed by someone forcefully enough to cause bruising. She was forced to perform oral sex with such force that it tore her upper lip. She also suffered carpet burns to the back, bruising to the shoulders. She was raped vaginally, anally, and then at some point was repeatedly kicked in the vaginal area.
Well, in this particular case, histologically, I could say that one injury is older than the other. For example, the frenulum happened before the last insult in the anogenital region, which was that area of severe beating. And the cut on the hand didn't show any bowel reaction, so that happened around the time of that, or which means that what we call perimortem, around the time she died.
Prosecutor Fitzgerald again presented some hypotheticals.
Dr. Lucy, again, I would ask, based upon your training, your experience, your expertise, I would like to ask you a series of hypothetical questions. If an expert from TBI has testified, that this area with the black magic marker is semen, sperm, on the lower left leg of the pants. Would that be consistent with Ms. Christian in a seated position? With sperm in her mouth, leaning forward and spitting the sperm out?
Yes, it could be consistent.
Start the new year right during the Xfinity Hello 2021 sales event. For a limited time, get Xfinity Internet and mobile together for only $35 a month for 12 months with a one-year agreement. And mobile with our 1 gig wireless data option. Plus, get $250 back. This sale ends soon, so visit Xfinity.com, call 1-800-XFINITY, or visit an Xfinity store today. Internet offer requires paperless billing and autopay. Ends 1/11/21. Restrictions apply. New performance starter plus internet customers only. Equipment taxes, regulatory recovery, and other fees extra and subject to change. After term, regular rates apply.
Well, the bleach would be destructive.
How so?
Because of the chemical properties and the influence on the bonds in the DNA.
Okay, let me ask you one more question. And again, Dr. Lucy, if Jennifer Millsaps with TBI has testified that the inside of the camisole, underneath the breast portion, in between the breasts, and this spot on the sweater right in here, tested positive for Latavius Cobbins' DNA. And this spot here on the inner left thigh tested positive for Latavius Cobbins' DNA. Would that be consistent with Ms. Christian in a seated position with sperm in her mouth, spitting it out, it getting into the inside of her bra, inside the camisole, settling in the bra portion of the camisole, and getting on the front of her sweater and the inner left thigh?
It's consistent. It could be one of the ways, yes.
And then, again, on the back of the Big Star jeans, there is some DNA that is consistent with Miss Christian's DNA. Would that be consistent with a cut hand that is bleeding, touching the back of her pants in that area and leaving blood?
It could be.
If her hands were tied, would that also be consistent?
Sure.
And also, inside in the interior of the jeans, Ms. Millsaps found DNA that is consistent with Mr. Davidson in the crotch area. Would that be consistent, again, with Mr. Davidson's sperm being inside Ms. Christian in her vaginal area or her anal area, and then putting the pants back on after Mr. Davidson deposited semen in her vagina and her anus?
Yes.
Put these back.
The photos from the autopsy were played out on a large movie-sized screen, almost play-by-play. Every, as each layer of binding is removed and as each trash bag is removed, there's a new photo and close-up shots. And they're very graphic, and they were so graphic, in fact, that a new prosecutor who's assisting in this case grew faint early on into the autopsy presentation of Shannon Christian's death.
And at 23:16.
We have a doctor in that.
And so we had to take a break in order to help her to recover. She did not return to the courtroom, however.
Again, with Ms. Christian, did you collect urine, blood, and vitreous samples?
Yes.
And did you send those off to the Tennessee Bureau of Investigation?
Yes.
What was the test results?
The only finding was a trace amount of alcohol, 0.01.
But she tested for barbiturates?
Yes.
Benzodiazepine?
Yes.
Cannabinoid?
Yes, that's marijuana, cannabinoids, yes.
Cocaine?
Yes.
Opiates?
Yes.
And again, the results? No basic drugs?
That was all negative, yes.
At some point during Shannon's ordeal, bleach had been poured on her body and down her throat. The perpetrators claim this was to dispose of any DNA. Shannon died with her eyes open.
How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, "Happy Friday!" Then you check your phone quickly and discover today is actually Friday. So yes, happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico. How do you feel when you switch to GEICO and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, Happy Friday! Then you check your phone quickly and discover today's actually Friday. So yes, Happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with GEICO feels just like that. Get more with GEICO.
On Sunday, January 7th, Shannon's parents had received a phone call from her work stating that Shannon hadn't shown up for her shift. Dina knew this wasn't like Shannon. Dina was already on alert because Shannon had called her on Saturday night. It later came out that Shannon had done this at the urging of Lamarcus, telling her she would be home, and of course, she didn't come home. Dina called the Newsoms to inform them that Shannon hadn't gone to work that day and of their concern for her whereabouts. Because Chris was 23, he would be gone for a night or two and it wouldn't alarm the Newsoms, so they weren't expecting him to be home. The Newsoms and the Christians both knew their kids wouldn't have run away, so the police were called. Being that Shannon and Chris were both adults, the police wouldn't go out just yet looking for them. The two families plus friends started investigating Shannon and Chris's location. After they scoured the streets, Shannon's SUV was spotted near the Chipman Street home. Upon inspection, they noted that there was mud on the floorboard and the seat was pushed back. After this discovery was made, the police became involved and the SUV was towed away and later processed for fingerprints and other crime scene evidence. On January 7th, locomotive engineer Jay Ford was operating a train between Cherry Street and 9th Avenue and spotted something that he thought was a piece of burnt wood. Upon further inspection, he could tell it was a body. He described what he saw as a severely burned man with no clothes on. He contacted the railroad dispatcher, who in turn called the police. They arrived shortly thereafter. It was the burnt remains of Christopher Newsom. Chris Newsom endured an assault of such brutality, as did Shannon, that there are no words in any language to adequately describe what these two went through. Chris had been repeatedly raped anally with an object. That object was thought to be the broken leg that was used on Shannon. He had been gagged with a sock that had been stuffed into his mouth. His ankles were tied with his own belt, and his hands were tied around his back. A sweatshirt was tied around his neck and secured with shoestrings. It was in this condition that he was forced to walk barefoot out to the tracks, made to kneel, and was shot in the neck, the back, and point-blank range to the head. Gas was then doused onto his body, and he was lit on fire. Thank goodness he was not alive when the fire was lit. It has been conjectured that he had been sexually assaulted one last time before being shot and set afire. A police officer and a chaplain arrived at the Newsom's door. They were there to perform the daunting task of informing them that their son's body had been found. Hugh and Mary asked the officers how they knew it was Chris, and the sergeant answered, "I could tell by his eyes." The sergeant's son and Chris had been friends. Mary Newsom collapsed. Meanwhile, investigators had gathered evidence from inside of Shannon's SUV. Fingerprints were found on a bank statement were later identified as belonging to Lamarcus Davidson. Davidson's address was obtained, and on January 8th, Lieutenant Keith LeBeau and three SWAT team members entered the home on Chipman Street. After surveying the area, they were able to ascertain that the house was vacant. Lieutenant DeBeau entered the kitchen. He quickly spotted a garbage can in the corner that was oddly shaped. He walked over to it and removed the lid. Shannon Christian's body had been found. An acquaintance of Gary Christian's called him and told him that something was going on at a house near where Chris's body had been found. An ambulance was there, and this acquaintance thought that Shannon's body had been discovered. This is the only account I could find on how the Christians were notified of Shannon's death. On January 11th, Eric Boyd ended up being stopped by police, and he voluntarily took officers to a vacant house where he had assisted LaMarcus in hiding out. When they approached the house, LaMarcus surrendered. It is said by some that he was wearing Chris Newsom's tennis shoes. Davidson was transported to the Knoxville Police Department. The interrogation began with his Miranda rights being read to him.
I don't recall who it was. It may have been my supervisor or another one of the agents had informed me that there were some federal arrest warrants for Mr. Davidson, and he had been apprehended by the Knoxville Police Department. I was aware of that, and they requested that I proceed to the Knoxville Police Department where Mr. Davidson was being taken after being arrested to participate in the interview.
And did you in fact do that?
Yes, I did.
When you arrived at the police department, who was there?
A number of the investigators with KPD, and Mr. Davidson was in an interview room.
What did you notice about Mr. Davidson's appearance?
Mr. Davidson was in a white T-shirt, either baggy blue jeans or baggy blue short or slacks.
Did he have on any shoes?
No, he did not.
Did you notice any injuries or anything to his face?
No.
Who was in the interview room with you?
Investigator Flores and Mr. Davidson.
And Investigator Flores is seen with the Knoxville Police Department?
Yes, he is.
And were you in the room for the entire interview?
Yes.
What did Mr. Davidson tell you how?
He started off the interview. He denied being present at his house for any of the activities that took place there. He told us that he had left his house Friday. As the interview progressed, his story changed. He said that he had spoken to his brother. He was aware that there had been a carjacking, but he had never seen the victims. And then the story changed again to where he was at the house when his brother and George Thomas arrived with the victim's 4Runner, and that he had seen the victims in the back of the 4Runner, and then he had left. And then the story changed, I believe, again. And he was there when the victims arrived with his brother and George Thomas. And when I say his brother, I'm referring to Vitalis Collins. That he spoke to his brother about what his brother had done. And he told us that his brother and George Thomas had left with the 4Runner and returned about 20 minutes later with the female victim. The female victim entered his house, and he had contact with her when she entered the house. But then he had left. And then his story changed again to where the Cobbins and Thomas arrived at the 4Runner and came back with the female victim, and he had further interaction with her in the house, and then he left again.
Was he asked whether or not he had sex with the female victim?
Yes, he was.
And what was his response?
No.
Was he asked whether or not his DNA would be on the female victim?
Yes, he was.
And what was his response?
He did not think so.
And again, was he asked whether or not he knew the victims?
Yes.
And what was his response?
He had never seen the victims before in his life.
Was he asked pointedly whether or not they were over at the house to buy dope?
Yes.
And what was his response?
No.
Investigators were able to acquire the names of all of the parties involved. Warrants were served, and all were arrested. Latavis, George, and Vanessa were transported from Kentucky to Knoxville to face their charges. Latavis was set to go to trial first, where Judge Richard Baumgartner was to oversee the proceedings. His charges were first-degree murder for Shannon and the facilitating of murder for Chris. He faced the death penalty for these charges. He did choose to testify on his own behalf.
I go and check on the girl, ask her, is she okay? She asked me, could she get some water? brought her some water out of the refrigerator. When I went into the room, she's laying on the air mattress with her hands bound over her head. She's laying on her back. Her hands are tied, still tied like this, and tied to a duffel bag full of free weights and books and stuff. Same thing with her feet. Her ankles are tied, and it's tied to a duffel bag. It's tied to a duffel bag with weights and books in it. So I untied her hands. Well, I didn't untie her hands. I untied the string that was going to the duffel bag. I untied it so she could sit up and drink the water. I gave her the water. She drank the water like that. She asked me what's going on. I said, I don't know. She asked me where her boyfriend is. I said, I don't know. She asked me because she smoked a cigarette. Her cigarettes and her purse were sitting on the bookshelf behind me. I could see a pack of red and white Marlboros on the book stand. I said, I don't see why not. I took a cigarette out, lit it for her, and gave it to her. She asked me, why were we doing this? I told her, it's not me. I don't have anything to do with this. Matter of fact, we're being held here against our will, just like you are. The only difference is that you're tied up and we're not. So she started asking me, would I convince him to let her go? I said, I'll try. She said, just please, please. She said, please, can you just convince him to let me go? I said, I'll try. She said, I'll do anything. Just please, just let me go. And she even offered oral sex. So, I had her give me oral sex. She gave me oral sex. As I started to ejaculate, I heard a noise outside and I heard Vanessa's flushing the toilet. So I got spooked. I jumped up, fixed my clothes. As I ejaculated, it got on her shirt and some on her pants. I fixed my clothes. I put her back like I found her and went back into the living room and sat down. Vanessa came out of the bathroom. We sat there on the floor, sat there looking stupid.
After 8 to 9 hours, the jury came back with a guilty verdict on all counts. The sentencing was scheduled to take place the next day. Dina, Gary, Chase, Hugh, and Mary, as well as Chris's sister Debbie, were able to give their victim impact statements prior to sentencing. During Hugh Newsom's impact statement, he addressed LaTalvis directly and appealed to him to testify against Eric Boyd, who they always believed was the one that killed Chris. LaTalvis appeared unfazed by Hugh's plea. Once these statements were complete, the defendant rose and the judge handed down the sentence of life in prison plus 100 years without the possibility of parole. Since there are 5 defendants, I won't go through each and every trial. I will go into more detail for LaMarcus and Eric Boyd. Vanessa Coleman was charged with facilitation of first-degree murder for Shannon and first-degree murder for Chris. She was found guilty only of the facilitation of the murder of Shannon. She was sentenced to 53 years. George Thomas was convicted and given 2 consecutive life sentences without parole for the charge of first-degree murder of Chris and Shannon. Eric Boyd was considered an accessory after the fact and was convicted of harboring a fugitive. He was sentenced to 18 years. He appealed this conviction, claiming Daphne Sutton, Davidson's ex-girlfriend, played a bigger role in hiding him than Boyd did, and she wasn't charged because of her being white and her ties to the Knoxville Police Department. In Davidson's trial, he never admitted to anything except that he had consensual sexual intercourse with Shannon. He was offered to have the death penalty taken off the table in exchange for a guilty plea for first-degree murder. He turned it down, claiming he would rather die than spend life in prison. The defense attorneys for Davidson took the angle of making the victims look bad by pointing out alleged marijuana use by Chris and Shannon. It was a rather heated trial. Words were exchanged between the families and the defense attorneys, prompting the judge to implore the court to, in essence, behave. Video was shown to the jury of the crime scene. Fingerprint experts testified to finding Davidson's palm print on the trash bag that Shannon was placed in, as well as on a bank statement that was in Shannon's vehicle. Dina and Mary were called to the stand to identify items that belonged to Shannon and Chris. They both took the opportunity to tell the jury things about the two that would offset the negative implications from the defense. Assistant District Attorney Takesha Fitzgerald decided to address the drug issue head-on. She asked Dina and Mary if they were aware that Shannon and Chris smoked marijuana. Mary answered no, and Dina stated that she knew about it and felt it was somewhat normal for kids of that age to experiment. Davidson chose not to testify on his own behalf. After 9 days of trial, the prosecution and the defense gave their closing statements. The jury deliberated 8 hours before finding Labarcus Davidson guilty of first-degree felony murder of Shannon and Chris. They also found him guilty of kidnapping, robbery, and rape of Shannon, and the facilitation of the rape of Chris. The jury decided on a sentence of death by lethal injection. When it was announced, there was an audible gasp from the victims' families, despite warnings from the judge not to do so. It has been said that Davidson was sorry that he hadn't taken the plea deal. In 2011, Judge Richard Baumgartner, the presiding judge in all of the trials, was under criminal investigation by the Tennessee Bureau of Investigation. He was being investigated for buying drugs from a defendant who appeared in his court, Dina Castleton. He was also using his influence to gain her leniency in various court cases in exchange for sex. The judge stepped down from his position, and he subsequently pled guilty to official misconduct. His 2-year sentence was suspended, and he was granted judicial diversion, which means his record was expungible. Judge Baumgartner died on January 23, 2018, of natural causes. Because of this set of events, the defendants in the Newsom Christian case all filed motions for new trials, and all of them were granted it except for Davidson. The courts had no choice but to grant these motions. Later on, though, Cobbin's motions for a new trial was overturned. That meant that Chris and Shannon's family had to endure another 3 trials. Although later on, you will hear that there will yet be another one. The trials went forward and all the defendants were found guilty once again and received the same sentences except for Vanessa Coleman. Hers was reduced to 35 years. She was recently up for parole in 2014, but was denied. Lamarcus Davidson has motioned for a new trial several times throughout the years. All have been denied. Davidson is housed at the Riverbend Maximum Security Institution, Unit 2 in Nashville, where he sits on death row. Eric Boyd, who was 47 at this time, was finally arraigned on charges of felony murder, first-degree murder, aggravated robbery, aggravated kidnapping, and aggravated rape, in a 36-count indictment after new evidence linked him to the rape of Shannon and the murder and rape of Chris. George Thomas cut a deal with prosecution to have his sentence reduced to 50 years in exchange for his testimony against Boyd. His testimony was key in this case, as it claimed that Boyd was the one that set Chris on fire and killed him while the others remained in the house. The trial lasted a week, and Boyd was convicted on all 36 of the charges against him. He was given two life sentences without parole. Asked if he had anything to say, he just said, quote, "I'm innocent," unquote. His demeanor throughout these proceedings has been described as smug. Less than 3 months after his trial, Boyd filed a motion for retrial citing insufficient evidence. That motion was denied. Hugh Newsom said of the aftermath, quote, "Our final goodbye to Chris, we embraced him in a body bag. We were not allowed to see him. At that particular time, Mary and I both promised we would not stop until Eric Boyd was prosecuted for killing him," unquote. Epilogue. Shannon Gail Christian was laid to rest in Highland Memorial West Cemetery on January 14th. Hugh Christopher Newsom was laid to rest on January 13th in Woodhaven Memorial Gardens. The house on Chipman Street was demolished and the land was purchased by Waste Connections Incorporated. A permanent memorial for Chris and Shannon was erected on that site. In 2008, a golf tournament and memorial foundation were established in Shannon's memory to provide a scholarship for a Farragut High School senior to attend the University of Tennessee. A Little League baseball tournament in Chris's honor was held at Halls Community Park in 2008 and 2009. There is also a memorial plaque that bears his name displayed there. A memorial scholarship is given annually in his name to a graduating Halls High School baseball player. Hugh turned 81 last August, and both he and Mary look healthy and happy. Dina and Gary are divorced, and Gary has since remarried. He gives inspirational speeches at churches from all over and has let the anger he had go. He also formed a motorcycle club called Shepherd's RC. The members ride in memory of Shannon and strongly promote the carrying of weapons and learning self-defense skills. A paragraph from their website reads, "We ride through the valley of the shadow of death, but we will not fear evil because Christ is in us. We will not fear the storm ahead because the man that calmed the sea rides within us. We can do nothing without Christ, and it is for his glory that we exist. Evil took Shannon from us way too soon, and the second she took her last breath, God took her back from evil. She is now with Christ in paradise." Mary Newsom remembered the last Christmas she spent with her son, and when she asked him what he wanted for Christmas, his answer was world peace, she said. "And I thought, my God, he's got peace now, not in this world, but he's got peace. I hope he would be proud of us." Thank you for listening to this heartbreaking tale of Chris and Shannon. Look for another episode to be released on August 22nd. If you haven't done so, please subscribe to the podcast on Apple, iTunes, Spotify, or your favorite podcast app. If you feel so inclined, go to Apple Podcasts and leave an honest review. It's always good to read those, and they are very much appreciated. If you would like to connect, Crimatorium can be found on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. For pictures from this episode and other episodes, go to crimatorium.com or the Crimatorium Facebook page. There is also a case suggestions form on the website. It would be very interesting getting requests and suggestions from you listeners. All episodes are researched, written, narrated, and edited by me, Madeline.
It's time to turn your bathroom into your personal sanctuary with Lowe's. Right now, save big on stylish fixtures and more storage, like a white shaker-style vanity cabinet with vanity top and mirror, now just $199. Or a dark gray vanity cabinet with white cultured marble top for just $299. Don't just do it yourself. Do it for yourself. Find more savings on everything you need for your home projects at Lowe's today. U.S. only, valid through February 2nd, 2021.
15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
Is that Shakespeare?
Nope, it's Geico.
Yeah, that's Shakespeare from one of his unpublished works. Oh, it be not for awakening. Nay, giveth thou the berries. For 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
Nope, it's from Geico, because they help save people money.
Well, I hate to break it to you, but Geico got it from Shakespeare.
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, Happy Friday! Then you check your phone quickly and discover today's actually Friday. So yes, Happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico. How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, Happy Friday. Then you check your phone quickly and discover today's actually Friday. So yes, Happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico.